Welcome to the Revenue Builders Podcast, a weekly show featuring B2B sales leaders and executives. Hosted by five-time CRO John McMahon and Force Management co-founder John Kaplan, the show goes behind the scenes with the people who have been there, done that, and seen the results. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe, rate, and review the show to help us reach more people. Revenue Builders is brought to you by Force Management. We help companies improve sales performance, executing the growth strategy at the point of sale. Find us at forcemanagement.com. Enjoy today's episode.
Hello and welcome to the Revenue Builders Podcast. I'm John Kaplan, joined by my great friend, author of the best-selling book, Qualified Sales Leader, five-time CRO, Johnny McMahon. How you doing, buddy?
Good, big man. Big voice. Kaplan.
Hey, Johnny, I'm thrilled to bring on our guest today. Mark Banfield is the CEO of 1E Software. 1E is the autonomous digital employee experience platform, or also known for EUC and service desk teams. Mark is a seasoned software executive with 20 years experience running high performance global teams. Prior to 1E, he was the CRO at Logic Monitor and the SVP and general manager for international at Autotask, which was acquired by Datto. He is relentlessly focused on building world-class customer experiences and collaborative high-energy teams. I'm really excited to talk to you, Mark. You're a good friend. You've been a customer of ours at Force Management a couple of times before, and I really am interested in this space that you've gone to. But before we talk about DEX, what I'd like to do is like just give us a little background of your career, how you came up, and then we'll talk a little bit about specifically more about 1E.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And guys, lovely to be on. I'm a big fan of the company. I'm a big fan of everything you do, and I love the podcast, so thanks for inviting me on. My background, I mean, as you can tell with my accent, I'm from Texas. Not really. So I'm from London.
I know that part of Texas. I know that part of Texas.
Yeah, you know, that's a London, Texas, you know. I'm from London, and I grew up in software. I've been in software my entire career. Started out at a company called MapInfo that was a geographical information systems business out of upstate New York, and started out very early on in sales, in tech sales, and kind of learned my trade there, and then, you know, continued in sales roles in various places, and then wound up eventually sort of running divisions and regions, and then most recently took this role at 1E as CEO. And it's been I've loved it. I've loved being in technology, loved being in software, and I love being in sales. And I think sales has been a big part of making me who I am as a person, as much as anything, you know?
Yeah, I love it. So one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on is like there's this buzz out there on this emerging market. And I don't want to call it an emerging market because that might send, you know, investors or whatever thinking. So I'm not professionally labeling it that way, but for me, it's emerging in my mind. Yeah. You know, this DEX, D-E-X, this digital employee experience. Could you tell us a little bit about kind of what that is, why it is, and then roll us into, like, you know, you became, you know, the CEO of 1E. Tell us a little bit about how that all panned out.
Happy to. I mean, it's an exciting area, very exciting area. I mean, what it stands for, DEX, D-E-X, Digital Employee Experience. What we do is we monitor and manage on the device you're using now for an employee, for any organization, we monitor and manage and measure the digital experience that the user's getting. More importantly, what we're able to do is identify when there's friction on the device, which happens, and, you know, quite often, which is going to lead to frustration. And what we can do is intercept that and remediate and fix the issue before the user really has a bad experience. Now, the knock-on effect is massive reduction in customers call, or employees calling into the service desk. So we take out a lot of cost out of the service desk, But we also improve the experience for users and therefore improve productivity, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a high profile topic. It gets the attention of a lot of executives in most organizations. And yeah, monitoring is not new. You guys know that. I mean, organizations have been using monitoring forever to monitor infrastructure, cloud, network, et cetera. But what they've not had a very good visibility on is to what the experience is of a user on the device. And I often say to people, you know, when was the last time you had a great IT day at work? And people look at me blankly.
Amen.
I never had one because there's always an issue, right? There's always some problem with Teams or Zoom, or there's some network issue, or there's some latency issue, or it takes too long to load something. And so that is causing a real problem for organizations. And if you think about it, in the world we live in now, which is kind of a hybrid world, you work from here, you work from there, office, home, you know, you're completely dependent on technology to do your job. Most jobs are dependent on technology. And therefore, how important is it to ensure that your employees have a great experience and ensure that they can use the technology you provide them when it's of paramount importance? I mean, I had dinner with the CEO of a very large tier one bank last year. And he said to me, you know, we spend multiple billions of dollars a year on technology. Yet my daughter at home has a better experience on her iPad than most of my employees do. And that's not good enough. And so therefore, we've got to get to a place where we can use your technology to identify issues and remediate issues quickly. So that's what we do. That's kind of in a nutshell what we do. And we do it for some of the largest brands in the world.
And then how do they measure that, Mark? Do they measure it based on employee productivity, or are there other sub-metrics that they might use to measure how effective these different tools are and your ability to make those tools more efficient for the employee?
It's a good question. So what we do is we actually create a score, a kind of what's so-called DEX score, which is based upon a number of different sort of input parameters, such as the stability, the reliability, the performance of the device they're using, on their interaction. And we also measure sentiment. So we will run sentiment surveys and kind of, you know, interaction with users to get their feedback. So that gives us a picture of how well their technology is performing for them. In terms of how do we measure it for the company, you know, we do, as you would hope I would do, you know, we follow a really good MEDPIC process, and we do a business value assessment. We analyze the tickets coming into the service desk, and we figure out which ones we can automate. And then we basically estimate what impact that's going to have in terms of the cost saving to the organization. So we can then measure that in, once we've sold and implemented, we can actually measure that impact and look at how much savings did we create. And then we can also look at the impact in terms of productivity, the amount of time that we give back to employees. So we can get to a very accurate number of, you know, this number of tickets were automated and remediated, and that resulted in this amount of time given back to employees and this amount of productivity. So we have a pretty scientific approach to how we measure the impact, both in terms of what it means to employ as well as what it means to the company from a sort of bottom line perspective.
And then do they also say that because there's less tickets coming into customer support that they can not have to hire as many customer support people with your product?
Exactly. That's a big part of the, there's sort of a couple of key parts to the business code. One is, yeah, effectively taking out heads of the service desk so they become more efficient. The other part of it is mean time to resolution. If tickets do come in, we integrate directly into ServiceNow so that within ServiceNow, the agents actually have immediate visibility and are able to remediate from within a ticket, which they don't have the ability to do without our technology. And then the other thing is things like hardware refresh. So typically, organizations are refreshing employees' devices every 3 to 4 years, but very often they don't need to. They could extend the life of that device by just, you know, upgrading the driver or improving the performance of the device. So we're able to prolong the use of those devices, or we can recycle them and put them into a different persona that perhaps has different requirements. And there's a CapEx deferment saving there as well. And the last thing is software reclaim. So because we're able to identify the inventory, exactly what people are using on the device, what software they're using, most organizations have a huge amount of software that's being used. or should I say, is not being used that they can reclaim licenses for. So there's a cost saving there. So there's a number of different avenues you can use to get to a business case and an ROI. And I guess the approach we take is a fairly consultative approach of like, okay, let's understand where your challenges are now. Where's the pain points today? And how can we best shape this for you so that we can get the biggest bang for the buck, if you like, in terms of what we can do for you?
You do such a great job of explaining value proposition. You're such a student of the game with qualification and metric and command of the message type principles. What I'm hearing from you, and I want the audience to pick up on this, is the problems you're solving are transcending IT. And what I mean by that is, so there's obviously infrastructure, IT productivity gains there, capital equipment opportunities.
Yeah.
But what I also hear you saying is like, if I was selling this, man, this is an employee productivity tool also, or employee productivity platform or conversation. And so I want to think about people like, you know, I talked to a lot of people and they're like, oh my God, I'm selling to IT. And I'm like, can you explain the mindset, man? Like, yes, these are IT solutions, but IT doesn't exist unless there's problems in the lines of business. How do you help your people kind of put those two worlds together?
It's a great question. And very often we're tasked with having to do that, to helping sort of bridge that gap to show that, yes, we're selling to IT, we're selling to the end user computing teams. But, you know, our purpose as a company, we kind of have a, you know, what do we exist? Why do we exist as a company? We talk about, you know, reimagining the relationship between technology and employees, and in doing so, helping IT shape the future of work. And that's a key thing, because IT very often is seen as a kind of a cost center, back office kind of function. Yeah. And of course, what we're doing here is we're enabling IT to start to become more of a strategic enabler. They can start to go to the lines of business and say, okay, well, yeah, we know that there's friction for your users. There's a downtime in terms of their ability to do their jobs, to be productive. And the reality is, great employee experience translates to great customer experience. I mean, you can't create a great customer experience unless you create a 3 Michelin star employee experience. And so that's what we're enabling IT to do, is to go to those lines of business, whatever business it could be. I mean, we sold to an automotive company and they figured out that actually the impact was how many cars they could produce each month.
Amen.
Due to digital friction at the endpoint. And you'll see more and more companies are talking about this concept of digital friction. And it's an absolute killer to productivity. It's a killer to morale. I mean, there's stats from Gartner that say that, you know, there's a certain percentage of people that look to leave a company because of the friction and the frustration they have at work doing their job with the technology they're using. And that's not a good thing for any company, right?
And how often does it come into play that, you know, there's a new application that everyone has to learn and it's a really slow ramp time or difficult onboarding time to get these employees up to speed? How can your company help in that situation?
We can help, because obviously we've got visibility into the applications they're using, whether it be a installed application or a SaaS web-based application. We've got a plugin for that. And we can see the usage of those applications. We can see whether people are getting value out of the use of those applications. We haven't gone completely into, you know, help and guide them through the applications. That's kind of a digital adoption platform kind of area, which we're not doing. But we're certainly monitoring and measuring how well those applications, how well they're being used, what the top usage applications are. So you're right, John. You can see straight away, you introduce a new application, you see very quickly whether people are using it, how much time they're spending on it, whether they're getting value from it. It's a very good one as well.
What if my friend John Kaplan is using it? It's a number of, you know, user error issues.
I would imagine that that's more common.
That's spot on. Hey, so no problem. That's an unprovoked attack, but I'm used to it from you.
I know one's coming my way now.
That's right. So it's clear. It's a white hot space. It is a space that transcends, well, I like how you said that, it transcends IT, lines of business, and ultimately customer experience.
Yeah.
And tying all those three together, it's a white hot space. It's great opportunities. I'm assuming you're growing the team. You're hiring?
Yeah, we're hiring. We're growing. I mean, we're an interesting business because we're a UK headquartered business, but 85% of our revenue comes from North America. So we're really almost like a US business in that respect. And we're growing in the US, we're growing in Europe. I mean, even in Asia, we're starting to see growth. So yeah, we're growing as a company. You were right what you said earlier. DEX is a pretty new term or a new category. There'll be a magic quadrant later this year from Gartner. There's a Forrester Wave, which is the equivalent that's out. I mean, we're solving very much issues that have existed in IT for a long time, but we're doing it in a more autonomous way. I mean, we like to think of this as an autonomous platform, but this is about like self-healing, fixing issues before a user, an IT technician has to go on and actually do anything.
You're on mute, Johnny.
So Mark, so far from what I've heard, like you're selling to executives, you're selling to CS is getting involved in some way, shape or form. You're probably speaking to them. Normally, where does your champion come out of? Do they come out of the executive roles? Do they come out of the IT executive roles? Do they come out of CS?
It's interesting. It's a good question. I mean, it seems to me we end up normally with a couple of champions. You need the technical champion that's kind of like really getting the technology and understanding the value of it. We very often find that's the initial champion that we build. But then where we really end up doing, like where we end up winning is when we get the executive champion. So we end up with two champions in many respects. And the executive champion is typically it can be even up to the CIO. We've had champions that are CIOs who become really huge champions of the product and the value proposition and what it can do for them. But typically it's a VP of infrastructure or a VP of end user computing, or increasingly the term is VP of digital workplace. So historically, the teams in enterprise were called end user computing, and increasingly they're called digital workplace. And that's a conscious shift in the way they think about describing that team, because it's about enabling employees with the right technology. It's about being predictive about what technology challenges they're having and being able to solve the challenges for them on a day-to-day basis. And so that's typically where the champions come from.
So if I listen to your pitch, let's say everything we talked about so far was kind of, let's say, your pitch. I'm an executive. Yeah. And then I say, okay, great, let's test the software. When's my aha moment? What do I see inside your software where I go, okay, I think what Mark's been telling me is right. When does that happen?
And how? That's a good question. Pretty quickly. I mean, one of the things, so what we tend to do with the proof of value that we run is that we sort of upfront identify the biggest challenges that we can solve for. So that typically is by interviewing their teams, but also looking at the data, going through the service desk and saying, okay, out of all these tickets, you've got a lot of tickets coming in about VPN access. And we know by the nature of what we're seeing in the ticket, we know we could automate that and we know we could remove that friction for a user. Now, where the aha moment, I think, for a lot of these people that we sell to is there's a couple of key things. First off, it's a real-time platform, meaning when we query 20,000 endpoints, we're querying those endpoints in real time and getting back the data in real time. That really matters. Real time really matters when it's things like a security issue or it's a mission. Or for example, we sold to one big bank and there was a story of like one of the executives was giving a presentation at a town hall and they were using WebEx. That's the first problem. People don't tend to use WebEx that much anymore, but these guys were using WebEx and it crashed. And they were like, this was terrible because they had to stop the whole town hall. And the reality is with our technology, we were able to say, well, we would have identified that in real time and fixed it instantaneously. Now, that real time capability makes a huge difference. We had another example with a very large defense organization where they were able to, remember the SolarWinds attack that happened back in 2020? Yeah, yeah. They infiltrated a lot of different people.
Logic Monitor had a field day off that one.
Yeah, we certainly did. We did very well off the back of that. But we, you know, this is an example of an organization that was able to survey 180,000 devices in a matter of minutes. I think 3 minutes. We're able to identify about 200 that were potentially compromised, put them in quarantine, killed the file extension, patched the device, put them back into production. And the aha moment for an organization like that is that the way that they would have done that without our technology would have taken 3 to 4 weeks and manually looking through devices. So I think the real-time capability and the ability to do things instantaneously is key. The second part of it is it's just the depth of visibility. It's the depth of understanding as to what's happening on the device, the ability to identify what's creating the friction, what's causing the issues. And that depth and breadth of visibility, I think, is the second part of it.
I love that. Hey, I want to make sure we go back and catch a golden nugget that got laid down here real quick. You're talking about technical champions, and I want our listeners to really kind of hone in on this, what you said. Is that kind of like, no matter what, we're always going to need technical champions. If you're selling technology, you are going to need technical champions. But the most elite sellers on the planet find a way to connect technical champions with business champions. And I just want to give some spirit out there. I've seen some people do an incredible job. They, you know, sometimes technical resources are so bogged down in, let's take a look at the reality for an IT person. Okay, what's the reality? IT projects around the world, in general, 80% of them are over budget and late. Just think about that. Remember the old days of the Maytag repairman? You go see the Maytag repairman, they're all bummed out. Okay, so IT is in this spot because there's so much demand and so much pressure that they're already in kind of a negative situation. The most elite sellers on the planet, I find what they do is they get people emotionally connected to what they do matters. Now, let's break that down real quick. First of all, I can already tell from you, Mark, that you believe what you do matters because you gave your responses to me in both a technical conversation and a business conversation. Mm-hmm. And you made it very clear, and a customer conversation. So you made it very clear that what you do matters. Now, the most elite sellers on the world take it a next step further, and they show up and they say, my job is to help the IT people get emotionally connected to what they do matters. And and I just want to lay that nugget down there, because when you put all those together, like, by the way, how many of you out there can right now write what I call a champion letter, write it to the CEO about the technical champion, give the technical champion and the technical teams all the credit. You don't need the credit, you need the money. So give them all the credit, align that conversation to a business conversation. Because of these technical capabilities that they were able to uncover, they were able to impact your company in these business ways. You write that champion letter. I'm challenging all of you out there to do it. If you can't write a champion letter, it means you're vulnerable. You're vulnerable for renewal. You're vulnerable for attrition. You're vulnerable. So everybody should hold themselves to that accountability. I didn't mean to preach there, but you laid down a golden nugget on technical champions, and I wanted to kind of connect the dots.
I think that's spot on. I fully agree with that. And you know, I mean, we often talk about, you know, we look at the people that we've sold to over the years and the technical champions, and you'll very often see their career just goes up and up. And very often it's off the strength of the fact that they've implemented this product and they've shown tremendous value to the business. And that's great for them. It's great for us. It's great for the business.
Huge. Okay. So you land at the CEO. Johnny, you got a wrap up comment there? Sorry.
No, I had a different question. It was really okay. So now I'm using 1E, love the software. I'm getting ready to evaluate 3 vendors in a POC. And does 1E start to play a role in how easy it's going to be for my people to use the software, and how easy is it going to be for me to implement the software? And am I going to get the opportunity out of the software that this vendor is proposing to me? You play any type of role in that area?
We do. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, I always think, you know, so the product's only part of what you're selling, right? I mean, I remember I was selling to Orange you know, the telco in the UK when I was like probably 23, 24. And the guy said to me, you know, Mark, everyone comes in with a pretty good product and value prop. He said, but I'm always looking at the people in the eyes and saying, it's the people behind the product that has to deliver the product. And that's what, that's what I'm really focused on. Is it, am I looking at someone I can trust and call at 11 p.m. when things hit the fan and I've got to like get things resolved? And that's a big part of it. I think the relationship you build in that pre-sale process, the trust that you build, that we're an organization, we're going to deliver for you, we're going to support you, we're going to continually enable you to show the value with the product that we provided. And that's a big part of it. It's about how do we get you up to speed? How do we get time to value? How do we make sure you can use the tool properly? How do we make sure that you're continually showing value to your organization?
You guys are killing this conversation, man. So now you laid out another golden nugget for me. And you are saying that, you know, it's not just what you sell, it's how you sell. And you're honing in on relationship building and trust. Would you guys both riff a little bit? I know you have, both of you have tremendous experience. Let's start with you, Mark, and then Johnny, bring us home on the topic. How do you demonstrate trust as a seller? How do you do it?
It's a very good question. I mean, I think there's a couple of things I think. One is, it's about integrity. I think you've got to show integrity always when you're dealing with the customer. I think you've got to show that you go the extra mile and that you're thinking about the things that they know that they're thinking about. You're one step ahead and you're thinking about what are the things they're going to need to overcome? What are the challenges they're going to have? Can they depend on you to provide the right level of information, the right kind of things they need that they're going to need in their job to do their job? And as I mentioned, it's integrity. I mean, I think the greatest skill of any seller is emotional intelligence. And I think that, you know, you need to show that. You need to show empathy. You need to understand what it's like to be in their shoes and really take the time to listen. I mean, it's amazing. Selling is more about listening than it's about anything else, I think. And it's about listening and understanding, not just the challenges, the obvious challenges of an organization. I mean, I did, before MedPick, you know, years and years ago, I did a thing called TAS, Target Account Selling. You probably remember that.
Oh, I do remember. Yeah.
It was kind of, I remember I was only 24 when I did that.
Me too.
I remember going home and telling my dad, there's like an entire science to this thing. And I remember one of the things it taught was about, you know, you've got to find the business objective or the business need of the person and their personal objective. And the personal objective is about understanding them and what they're trying to get done and what they're trying to do. And so I think that empathy is everything. I think that's how you build trust. That's kind of how I look at it.
Love it, Johnny.
Well, I agree. First of all, I agree with Mark that a lot of it has to do with integrity, and that integrity happens by your actions, you know. What you say you're going to do, you do. And then, you know, that you have their best interests at heart, I think is really important. You know, you understand how they're measured. You're focused on their problems. And like we always preach that you're patient, like you slow down in the beginning of the process, the discovery area, the scoping area, to truly understand almost more about their environment than they start to understand. You know, when you got it, is when you're getting high and widening count and you come to one of your contacts if you met several times, and now they're asking you about what's going on in the account.
Yeah.
I always used to love that. Because then you know, oh shit, I'm wired in, right? And it's because, you know, I know more about the customer than they almost know about me.
I love that. Let's wrap a bow on this one. I'm just going to give you my two cents on it. I think what the most elite sellers do, and I'm not trying to alienate anybody listening. I want our conversations to be like tapping your full potential. Wherever you are, we can always go somewhere else. We can always go higher. So I'm not assuming that our audience doesn't know this. I just want to give them some spirit around it. But, you know, for me, I break it down to you got to wake up in the morning. You got to say, I have to attach myself to the biggest business issue facing that customer. Once I do that, the road is paved with gold. And it's not easy to do, but you got to take your technical capabilities and turn them into business capabilities and turn them into customer outcomes. And you just got to follow that thread all the way through. The other thing I think you got to do is you have to help champions build effective decision criteria, and they will allow you
to influence that criteria with your differentiation. That's trust. When they are allowing you to influence that that decision criteria with your differentiation, that's trust. And the last one for me is you've got to prepare them for their inside communication. You can't sell to everybody inside an account. When somebody really trusts you, it's like you do a little mantra, Mark. Remember the days when we did this? You do a little mantra. Hey, you told me, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, that these were the positive business outcomes that you're trying to achieve. Customer says, yes. Okay. Then you said that these were the technical capabilities, the requirements that you needed to have. And the customer says, yes. And then you said you were going to measure success this way. Go play this back. If you're listening to me on a walk or wherever, go play this back, because you have to have these three things in place before you even bring up what you do for a living. Okay, let's say you have the three things there. Positive business outcomes, required capabilities, and metrics. Now I can pivot and say, let me tell you how we do that. Let me tell you how we do it differently or better and where we've done it before. And here's where the trust comes in. I call it the 10-finger presentation. A lot of times I'm just doing that on a slide or just doing it on a whiteboard, and the customer either snaps a picture of it or says, hey, can I have that? Because what they just said was, you just did an unbelievably great job of recapping what we've been talking about and put it to how your stuff is relevant and why I'm going to choose you. That's trust. You guys agree?
Yeah. The other thing, Johnny, along those lines is when you have a champion or you think you have a potential champion, they're going into a meeting where there's going to be 10 other people in there, one of which is going to be the competitor's champion. You need to role play with them of all the things that are going to be said about you and your company. And, you know, I've had it where some customers say to me, John, look, I got this. And I go, yeah, maybe you do, but can I ask you one question? And I ask them one question that I know they can't answer that's going to come up in a meeting. And then they say, I don't know what I would say there. And I said, that's why we need to sit down and talk about it, because you have to prepare them. If you don't prepare them and they go in the other meeting against the competition's champion and a bunch of their peers, and the competition's salesperson has prepared them, they're going to get shot down, and that's the end of your sale.
I love that. Hey, one more, and then Mark, I want to talk about your go-to-market. You guys are getting me all fired up on this. Johnny, there's another question. There's another question that I really love to ask, and people are so afraid to ask it. I don't know why. It's like they don't want the answer. When I was leading teams, I would go to my reps and say, hey, let's pick up the phone and allow me to ask your champion, why us? Yeah. And they'd be like, okay. And I'd be like, okay, well, what do you think they're going to say when I ask why us? So in the old days, Johnny, with you, it was like, why PTC? Okay. So here's what I heard. We pick up the phone. We actually do this. We pick up the phone and I'd say, Mr. or Mrs. Champion, why us? And it was always the same. They were always talking about the same thing. And it wound up to be, well, John and Mark, they're awesome. They're very responsive to us. They are, you know, they handle all of our questions. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, what's the CFO going to say to this? You're talking about relationships with the vendor? That ain't cutting it with the CEO. So then what I do is I say, hey, we love John and Mark also. We love them too. They're great. With our customers give similar feedback. Well, what are you going to tell the CFO? And then they're like, and then what I do is I never try to embarrass a customer. I just say, hey, please accept our apologies. We actually role played this before we got on the phone with you. And we thought that this was going to be the outcome. And we know that we have to tighten up kind of what we do for you. So do you mind if I kind of recap what we've heard from you? Positive business outcomes, technical required capabilities, and metrics. How we do that, how we do it differently or better, and where we've done it before. All of a sudden, the champion looks at you and says, hallelujah, that's exactly what I need. And I'm just telling you, that's a great one. If you got a deal on the forecast right now, ask the rep, if I call the champion right now and I ask, why us, what are they going to say? And I guarantee people are puckering up right now, thinking about if they had to do that, real deal. But I would suggest you do it.
I love that. I'm going to tell the sales leaders to do that on all their reps. No question.
Hey, so let's go to your dude, you have such unbelievable go-to-market experience. Now you're at the CEO level. You've had unbelievable CRO success. Now, and I think this is the first CEO level you've had, right? This one?
Yeah, that's the first one.
Okay.
That's the first one. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, okay, what were the big differences? You crushed the CRO role, and now you're CEO. Give us some of the insights on what are some of the big differences.
I mean, yeah, good question. I mean, I mean, you know, one of the things that what's the same is that, you know, with the CRO role, you're completely accountable at all times, and you never stop living and breathing by the number. And, you know, you dream about it at night, you wake up at night, you never stop, you're on 24/7. And it's that times 10 more when you're the CEO. It's just the same of more. I mean, yeah, you're just, you know, it's, you are so accountable, not just for the number, but for everything else in the business. And the way I look at it is like there's, the way I've looked at it, I guess, doing this job is there's basically three systems, I think, that run a software company. There's the go-to-market system, the sales and marketing. There's the product and engineering system, the development of the product. And then there's the support customer success system. That's the kind of three parts of the company. And I think the from what I see is the skill is really trying to say, how do you make those three areas work together? I mean, that you can have individual components that work awesomely, but the real skill is, the real key is to, how do I make them all work together in unison so that I can deliver the greatest value and the greatest returns for the company? And I think that that's a big part of why I see the CEO role is that. It's about how do I make sure I put the right kind of systems in place, processes, the right kind of structure, the right kind of goals, the right kind of North Star that we're trying to get to, all these things that are a big part of it, but how do I make them all work together in unison? And that for me seems to be the biggest part of the job. I mean, I'm not an expert in product and engineering. I'm not an expert in customer success. Maybe I'm not an expert in go to market, but I think that, you know, you don't need to be an expert in all those areas. What you need to do is understand how do I get them all working together? How do I hire great teams? And how do I get them aligned and focused on the right outcomes and go in the same direction? I mean, I think it's, for me, it's just about team. I mean, it always comes down to the people. It's about team. I got this thing I talk about, which is CASE. It's an acronym, CASE. The C is, what's the job as a CEO? The C is to create a community. That's the first part of the job. The
what
A,
did you say it was? I missed it.
To create a community, a following. Oh. You know, human nature is we want to be part of something. And, you know, great companies, certainly the great companies I work for, people feel they belong to something bigger than, you know, it's a bigger thing than just a job. It's like you're part of a mission. So I think the first part of the CEO role is that. The second part is the A in case is authenticity. I mean, I think, you know, people want to work for authentic organizations. They want to follow authentic leaders. I try and be as authentic as I can. I tell anyone in the business, be authentic, be true, be open, have integrity. The S in the CASE acronym is significance. I think that, you know, I think the job of the CEO is to make everyone in the organization, every person at any level, realize that their job is significant as part of the mission that you're trying to get to. I mean, there's that famous story, I think it's true, I don't know if it's true, but I've heard the story, which is JFK walking around NASA, and he goes up to the guy cleaning the floor, he says, what are you here? What's your job? And he says, I'm here to put a man on the moon. And now, you know, whether it's true, I mean, someone did a great job of making the arguably the lowest job in the organization feel part of a mission, the mission of the organization. And so that significance is key. And I think the E in CASE, the fourth letter, is energy and excitement. I think you have an obligation as a CEO to bring the energy and excitement and passion to the job every day, because I think that, you know, people are looking up to, like, you know, if you lack energy at the top, guess what? You're not going to have energy coming down in the organization. So, I mean, I'm often very much pushing myself every day. Did I do those four things today? And of course, all the other things go along with it, like the operations and the culture, and, you know, making sure that everyone's aligned to the right objectives. But in the end, creating the culture, I think, is the biggest part of it.
That was fantastic. I'm just thinking, I love this acronym. I'm thinking about a couple of things. And for me, the one that really stands out to me, okay, connecting people to mission is like really huge. And I know that it's really everybody's role that leads. So you could take this case and say, this is case for everyone who's entrusted to lead another human being. I've always said on this last one here on energy excitement, if you're not excited about what you do, why should I be? And like now, give us some advice out there. I'm a CRO or I'm a CEO and I'm just not feeling it, man. I wake up, I just had a conversation this morning on a couple of deals that like we got to get going. Like we got some stuff to do. And like I'm feeling a little challenged this morning, but I can't show that to the organization. And yet I'm balancing that against authenticity. How do you do it? Like, do you have people? I know some people would say, I've got a mentor that's kind of outside the company because I can't tell anybody inside the company. Could you guys, I would like both of you to comment on that because there's CROs, CEOs, leaders listening to this out there. And some of them just, they don't know who they can talk to and what they can say.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it's not like we all wake up every day bouncing out of bed. Sometimes you don't. And
Right.
sometimes you've got to really like pick yourself up and get yourself going. I mean, I heard that saying once is like, it's something about like sometimes it rains, there's dark times and it rains. You've got to learn how to dance in the storms. And I think that you have storms, right? I mean, you have some rough points in any business. There's ups and downs. And I think you've got to learn to just embrace and dance in the storm is kind of the way I look at it. And but in your case of who do you, I go to lots of people as a source of inspiration. I mean, yeah, I call ex-colleagues, current colleagues. I mean, I talk to mentors of mine. Just a text here and there, can get you going and can give you. I listen to your podcast. I mean, podcasts are a great thing. I mean, I go on a run in the morning. Sometimes I'm not feeling 100%. I go on a run, I listen to a podcast, I get focused, I take some time out, get tuned in and get back at it. I mean, I think that's a lot of it's self-discipline and mental toughness, I think, is a lot of it.
I like it. Johnny, how about you? What advice do you give?
A big one for me is what Mark mentioned first, which is he put it in terms of community. But for me, right along those lines, is people want to feel like they're a special person on a very special team in a special journey. And it's up to the CEO or the leader inside the organization to set a realistic vision for the company or for their team. It's something that they all can feel really proud of. When they get there, and really proud of just trying to get there. It's almost like when we had Cedric Pech on from who's a CRO at MongoDB, and he quoted that famous French author. And now I'm hopefully not going to screw it up when I paraphrase it, but it said, if you want to motivate men, don't get them to focus on, compiling the wood and banging nails and trying to construct the boat. Focus their energies on the vast and endless beauty of the sea.
Chill
And
bumps. Chill bumps, brother. That's awesome.
I love that. I love that.
Because like to Mark's point, we're all going to have really good days and we're going to have really bad days. I think if you sit on the couch for 30 days, you're going to have good days and bad days. So in work, you're going to have some good days and bad days. But you have to focus on, why am I there and why am I doing what I'm doing? Right. And if you don't give people a vision, it gets really difficult for them to ask themselves, why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah, so Johnny, you're tying into something so great, and I'm going to paraphrase what you both have said. It's really your job as a leader is really about the why. When you can get people emotionally connected to the why, the what and the how tend to take care of themselves. And I just want to make one last comment on the vision piece. First of all, I love the rain and dance in the storm. That like I'm stealing that one. That's legit because you have to learn how to dance in the storm. And those are the most resilient people on the planet. They don't stop dancing. They just dance. Some days they're dancing in the sun. Some days they're dancing in the storm. The last thing was for me, what I found is the future is very difficult for people. We're the only mammal on the planet that has the ability to see ourselves in the future. to project ourselves in the future. So this should be a huge gift from God. Well, mankind has totally screwed this up, because when we see ourselves in the future, we get amnesia. Like, there's many scenarios. I call it psychological immune system. So I'm experiencing something and I look to the future and I go, here's how this is going to play out. And they say the data says is that, you know, 80% of the people, or excuse me, 80% of the people are just flat wrong. They're wrong about what the outcome is going to be. And they're mostly wrong. This was interesting for me. They're mostly wrong about the duration of the suck. So if you have some disease, if you have some situation in your forecast, you look at the future and you're like, I'm going to be in this suck state forever. And I think leaders, great leaders, they have to create a vision of what the future, of what basically it's what the purpose is in the future. So it's what the why becomes in the future, because human beings are trying to see the future. And if you leave it up to the individual, they're going to paint a bad future, number one. Or number two, if they can't see themselves in the future, they're going to leave. And that's one of the number one reasons why people leave, is because leaders haven't done a great job of projecting a future and putting that individual in it. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, because then they feel like a hamster on a wheel. Then they constantly ask themselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? And if I don't want to keep being the same hamster on the same wheel, I'm going someplace else.
Awesome.
I fully agree. I mean, it's you know, the mind's a dangerous thing, especially in this kind of environment where you can get, especially for salespeople or any kind of like people responsible commercially. I mean, you know, you've got to really control your mind and get ahead of it. I mean, there's that famous Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche. I always pronounce the name, this, you know, the psychologist.
I would just say Nietzsche. That's not right either, but go ahead.
No, you know the guy. And his thing is, like, if you gaze long enough into the abyss will look right back at you. And, like, meaning, like, you've got to have a vision and you've got to have a passion and know where you're trying to get to. I mean, it's dangerous otherwise, because you just get so focused on, oh, how am I going to get there? What am I going to do? And that's why I say, you wake up in the morning, you've got to, if you're not feeling it, you've got to self-motivate. And however you do it, you know, you've got to remain very, very, very positive and focused.
But Johnny, you know, we're really good as humans is looking into the future. What we're really bad at, most humans, is being in the moment, living in the moment, being in the here, being in the now, listening to exactly what our customer is saying without thinking about what we're going to say or what I'm going to do tonight when I get home or any of those things. That's the real difficulty, especially on a sales side, for people to be in the moment, right here, in the now, listening and understanding and asking the right questions.
I love that, Johnny. And it begins with the leader. Like, one of the reasons why I loved working for you, with all the crap that you put us through, but one of the reasons why I love, you know, first of all, you took us to a place we couldn't get to on our own from a performance standpoint, which I think is a leader's job. You got to be able to take people to a place that they can't get to on their own, or they just stop listening to you. But Johnny, you were always big on this, like living in the moment. And it was so good. The concept was so good, but most people aren't very good at it. And you're actually very good at it. And how do you demonstrate living in the moment? Number one is you listen. And I always found that, like, talking to you, I always had to be really prepared, because you were like, if you're on the, you're the kind of guy, you're the kind of leader that if I'm on the phone with you and I'm telling you about something, you're listening, I'm probably saying, hey, are you still there? Like, how many leaders are listening to this conversation right now? And nobody's ever said that to you. Nobody's ever asked, like, hey, are you still there? It means you're not listening. Because it happens to me and Johnny all the time. I'm like, hey, are you still there? And you're like, yeah, I'm just listening. And like, that's powerful. That's authentic. But it's also powerful in the sense that you're demonstrating living in the moment. Mark, can you relate to that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And one thing I heard you say was one of your podcasts, I think, John, I heard you talk about, was taking that time to really, when you're leading people, just really understand the people that are working for you. You know, sometimes you see they're a little bit off, and just talk to them. So much of what we do in a job is about metrics, numbers, what's happening, what's this, you know, as opposed to sometimes it's about just like, Are you okay? Let's just talk. And I remember hearing you say that. You used to do that a lot with your sales teams. It's like, just check in with them and just go, maybe it's go for a pint, maybe go for a coffee. But you're not trying to go to sort of quiz them on anything. You're just going to see how they're doing. And it's amazing, actually, what impact you can have on someone if you just take that time to show you care, you know?
Agree. I mean, sometimes a meeting ends, you know how we book our meetings almost every hour in the hour, and a meeting ends 10 minutes early. I used to pick up the phone and call 3 or 4 people in those 10 minutes to see how you doing. That's it. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was the recipient of those phone calls, Mark, and there was a lot more to it. So I had to really listen to how he asked that question because he was expecting certain answers. So just to be fair,
something to do with the forecast, Mark.
It was always the forecast. Hey, how you doing, man? Are you comfortable you're going to make your number? Or are you going to be looking for a new job? That's what it meant. Hey, Mark, in the remaining time we have, first of all, I'm just so thoroughly, and I knew I was going to love this conversation with you. I knew Johnny and I would really love the topic. Would you just kind of drive us home when you think about sales and like driving high performance through sales? Like, you're just making mental notes in the morning as a CEO. Like, what do you think are like the most important things right now that people should be thinking about of driving high performance in sales right now?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think it is about a commitment to excellence. I mean, I think that sales, like any other, like anything else in any walk of life, it's a science and an art, but it's an incredible skill. And you can just, you can get better and better and better at it. And, you know, what's that saying? Success trains and failure complaints. I mean, the most successful salespeople, they are the ones who train the hardest. They are doing the basics. They're constant. I remember chatting to a sales guy years ago, and I sort of said to him, like, you know, your conversion rate, you know, is just incredible. I mean, you're just like constantly high. And he sort of talked to me about the sort of opening email that he does to a client. If like and he sort of said, yeah, Mark, I've analyzed that email so many times. I've changed it a million times. I've tried to perfect it every single step of the way. And I've just perfected, and I still don't think it's good enough. I'm going to keep perfecting. And I was thinking, like, that's just one small little part of an entire sales job. And if you took that same mindset to everything you do, I mean, it's like the theory of marginal gains. You know that theory of marginal gains? Sir David Brailsford, the British cycling coach that won all the golds in the 2012, and the British cycling team had never won anything like that. But they won all those golds. And his whole thing was to break down every part of a bike, of cycling a bike, and say, how do I improve everything by just 1%? Like, for example, even when they would go on tours, they'd take their own pillows and own duvet covers just because it might make them sleep slightly better. And in sales, you can improve more than 1%. You can improve everything by 10, 15, 20%. So I think the best sellers are the ones who are just trying to perfect excellence every step of the way. And I think that, for me, that I often see they're the best salespeople. They're the ones that really take it as a real mission to become the best they can at what they do.
Love it. Johnny, how about you? What are you seeing right now?
They work on their weaknesses. Most people only continue to do what they're good at. They don't really look in the mirror and say, you know, I'm really good at these three things, but I'm really bad at these three things. And they keep, it's comfort. I mean, humans love to be comfortable. So they keep working on the same three things that they're already good at. And they never really face the fact that, to Mark's point, I have to gain knowledge and I have to develop this skill of something that I'm really not good at if I really want to excel at this profession. So they look at it as a profession and something where you have to have developed all the skills to be excellent, not just the ones you're good at.
I love that. And one of the things I like to talk about is Steve Jobs. I think it was in 2000 and I want to say 2008. And you can go on the internet and look at it. It's a YouTube video where he is addressing the graduating class at Stanford. And he said, basically, I'll paraphrase, I'll probably get it wrong, but he basically said, your job is going to consume a lot of your life. So you need to make sure that you really like your job and you like what you do. And I looked at that and I thought, okay, I took that to the next level. But in order to really love what you do, because I said, I think he said, you got to love what you do. In order to really love what you do, please write this down, folks, in your mind. You first have to believe that it matters. And if you're listening to this right now and you don't believe what you do matters, then you're not going to be able to get people emotionally connected to what they do through your products and services matter. And I believe it all starts there. Great leaders, I think that's the first thing they do when they come into organizations. They get people emotionally connected to what they do matters. And I think that was a big part of the theme of what we talked about today. Any last words, Mark?
Well, also on, just on that, Mark, sorry. You know, it's for the young people that are listening. You know, when you first enter anything, you're not going to jump into the NBA, the NHL, or the NFL, or any of those top-tier sports events. You're going to start somewhere. So if you're starting in sales, those first couple of years, you're not going to be knowledgeable enough. You're not going to be skilled enough. And before you decide that you're not good at it, you got to go put the effort in to get to a certain level of competence before you can just say, you know, I really suck at sales, or I really suck at hockey or football or basketball. You got to give yourself some time, but you got to, but to your point, John, you got to put the work in. If you're willing to put the work in, have a good mentor, as Mark talked about, and develop the right skills to a certain level of competence, then go decide if you want to keep doing it otherwise or throw it out the window. But don't just give up when you're young and you're new and you don't have any knowledge and any real skills yet.
Love that. Mark, give us some final words, man.
I would agree. Yeah, I agree with that, John. There's no shortcuts. I mean, one of the things, one of our four values in 1E is belief. And I put that value in place when I got here because I was like, you know, in my view is like, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. It starts with the mind and what do you believe? But to your point, John, I mean, that doesn't mean it's going to happen in 6 months. And I watch youngsters come in and you've got to go through the hard yards. There was no shortcuts in any of our careers and there still isn't. I think I work harder now than I ever worked. And do I look back now in my career and think, do you know, I probably worked too hard? No, I sometimes think I was running hard. I sometimes think, man, I could have run harder. Could I have done more? And I think that, you know, I think you just got to keep pushing yourself. And I like that. I heard one of your guys on one of these podcasts talk about lions want to run with lions. I love that saying. Because I think successful people want to be around successful people. They want to push each other, and I certainly think in a commercial organization that works very well when you get people that are really competitive and they want to push each other and they want to succeed and they're tied to a mission to win.
I love that. I remember back when I first started with Xerox back in the day. There were, I'm going to give a few shout outs here. It was Dave Murphy, Keith Shaw, Ron Nelson. We used to show up in the morning before work. And we would sit and we would challenge each other called infronts. Now, Dave Murphy was really cool because he was 20 years older than us, but he wanted to hang with the younger people because he wanted the energy. He wanted the juice. So we had raw energy and raw juice. What he had was knowledge, skills, and experience. So he got the juice from us. We got the knowledge and the skills from him. And we challenge each other. We call in fronts. How many in fronts are you going to get today? How many people are you going to get in front of today? And we'd come back at the end of the day and talk about the in fronts. So I just love it. I love this conversation today. One of the things I'm thinking as we wrap this up is there's no elevator for success. You have to take the stairs is basically what you both just said. You got to be comfortable taking the stairs. How many of you right now, you're in an office building, and I mean, just think of your mentality. Are you taking the elevator or are you taking the stairs? It kind of begins with some of those decisions. Mark, this conversation went exactly where I thought it was going to go, with tremendous insights, learning about DEX, learning about 1E, learning from you and your great insights. And then Johnny, you know, thanks so much for posting today. Johnny's got laryngitis, and I'm really, really thankful that you were able to make it. Mark, you crushed it. Keep doing what you're doing. And everybody,
thanks,
look up 1E. How can we find you out there, bro?
1E.com.
Okay.
Come and check us out.
That's not difficult.
1E.com.
Not difficult. So one nice. You know where I leave you with this, how the 1E name came about? You know, remember the blue screen of death that you get on the on PC sometimes? There's a syntax code or an error code that says 000.1E.
Yes.
And the founder, Samir Karai, he was like, I'm gonna stop that experience from ever happening for a user. That's how the name came about. It's kind of a cool name.
Yeah. I love that. Well done. And thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Mark. And
thanks, John. Yeah, thanks, John.
You got it, man.
It was great. I enjoyed it.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners for, you know, listening to another episode of Revenue Builder.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Be sure to check us out at forcemanagement.com.